Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. Michael Bungay Stanier is the founder and senior partner of Box of Crayons, a company that helps organizations do less good work and more great work. He created the 8 Irresistible Principles of Fun, a short internet movie that has been viewed by millions of people around the world, and his first book, Get Unstuck and Get Going, on the stuff that matters, has won a number of awards. Michael's latest book is Do More Great Work, Stop the Busy Work and Start the Work That Matters. It contains 15 practical tools to help you find, start, and sustain more great work. And you can see a short animated version of this manifesto on the website domoregreatwork.com. Michael, welcome to Edgewise.
Dave, thank you so much for having me.
Michael, let's just get started here. When people approach you with a question of, does the world really need another self-help book? How do you answer that question?
I think it's fair to acknowledge that there is an awful lot of pretty terrible self-help books out there. But people are always looking for tools to help them figure out, how do we focus on what matters? How do I get to be happier? How do I feel more engaged in my work? How do I find more meaning in my life? How do I cope with the overwhelm that's happening in my life? It doesn't really matter whether this stuff comes to you in a book or through a blog or through Twitter. The channel doesn't matter. But what does matter is that people have access to tools that they can use, and they have the support and encouragement and time and space to actually think about taking responsibility for the lives they lead. If a book is the best format and it's a good book, then hooray for that.
The book is constructed in a really novel way. You utilize the power of maps or visual tools. Talk to us a minute about that.
If I had to give myself just one label, I would call myself a facilitator, because what a facilitator does is create and hold the space for people to figure out stuff on their own. One of the challenges and problems I would see with many business books and self-help books, for that matter, is they may have some good ideas, but people often say, well, that's interesting, but how do I use that? How do I incorporate that into my life? Part of what we've done in Do More Great Work with these 15 different exercises is these are processes that people can quickly and easily work their way through to get a new perspective on what's going on for them and start moving into action. But people have given me the generous gift of their time to try and read my book and work through my book. The least I could do is make it as practical and as accessible and as useful for them as possible. That's really what that map process is like. Whether you're visual or auditory, there's a way to get in and get practical on some of these ideas.
How do you address the question of, my boss really doesn't pay me to do exceptional, wonderful stuff that I have fun doing? I have a job description and I have to hit those marks.
This isn't a call to do whatever self-indulgent work you'd like, and let's hope that your bosses catch up to you on that. It's really about, how do you find the sweet spot between what the organization wants you to do and what you want to do? What's sad is it's not some sort of conspiratorial plot by our bosses to keep us unhappy or keep us doing this busy work. It's just that the way the system works, we often get overwhelmed by that stuff. So I would say that most bosses and most organizations value people who start the conversation about, we have too much stuff on our plate, so where do we focus? What will make the most difference? And a really great place to start is to find the most meaning in the work that you can do that. Not all bosses and not all organizations. Sometimes you have a boss that says, shut up and do what I tell you. Sometimes you have an organization that says, follow the rules, follow the orders. I'm not paying you to think, I'm paying you to act. But Dan Pink, in his new book, Drive, talks about motivation 3.0. And he says, increasingly from the Western world, certainly in the US and Canada, the work we're doing is the work that involves people's brains and involves getting them motivated and involves their bringing their heart and their spirit to work. Because when you have that, you have an organization that is most likely to thrive.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's talk a little bit about Stop the Busy Work, 7 counterintuitive ways to find more time, space, and courage to do great work. Number 3, I find particularly interesting, saying yes slowly.
One of the deep truths about doing more great work is you only get to do more great work when you learn how to say no. Because the greatest challenge to great work is, in fact, not our bad work, even though that's a problem, but it's actually the good work. We have so much good work that it's overwhelming. We could spend our lives just trying to get through our assigned workload. It would never end. Meetings, email, projects. So part of the discipline of getting towards great work is you get to know what to say yes to and what to say no to. Saying yes is easy. Saying no is more challenging. And part of the challenge for all of us who work in an organization is most organizations don't have no as a common word. It's yes. When I ask you a question, the expectation is yes. So this is the tactic. Don't think about it as saying no. Think about, how do I say yes more slowly? Because in fact, what kills you is how quickly you say yes, how quickly you say, I'll take that on. So you say yes more slowly, delay the moment. And you do that by asking questions.
Can you give us some examples?
Yeah. Questions you can ask are things like, who else have you asked? And why are you asking me? And is there something here that only I can do? And if I could only do part of this, what would I focus on? And when you say it's urgent, what do you really mean by that? And what standard do I need to deliver this at? There's a bunch of good questions you can ask, which are useful questions because they're clarifying questions.
Okay.
Four things can happen if you ask this type of question. The first is, somebody can say, shut up and just do it. The second thing they might do is they may answer all your questions. And that's perfect because it means that it's a really thoughtful request and you're really clear on what's being asked of you. The third thing that can happen is they may say, let me go away and have a think about your questions and I'll come back to you. Sometimes they will, but often they won't. That's fantastic because that gives you time to focus on your great work. And sometimes they will say, I can't be bothered with you. I'm just going to go and find somebody who says yes faster. And that's great as well. Because if you get a reputation for not being somebody who says yes quickly, it means people won't be asking you to do any old thing just because you have a pulse and you happen to be standing there.
Okay. Number four is create a great workspace. So I've done my maps. I know what my great work is. I'm all fired up about it. How come I can't just sit back down at my desk and do my great work?
It's one of these profound lessons, which is your body actually leads your brain. So how you are physically influences how you think. And as soon as you sit down at that part of your work desk, which is your good work stage, that familiar seat where you sit down to be productive and efficient and focused and process stuff, your brain says, oh, I get it. I know why I'm here. It's not to be creative and strategic and to think differently. It's to get stuff done. And that's what you want. But if you need to do great work thinking, and great work thinking requires you to be more creative, more strategic, more thoughtful, and more visionary, then creating a different place to do this work can be very helpful. So in my office, I have a small desk with my computer on it. And then literally one big step away, I have another small desk, which has some flowers. It has a couple of little postcards that inspire me and that I like. There's a picture, which I love as well. I scoot over here whenever I'm trying to do my thinking work. And what that does is get me away from the distractions of my phone and my email. It also puts me in a different physical space where my body says, I know when Michael's sitting at this desk, he's expecting his brain to work in this way. And so it makes it easier for me to do my great work.
And the last one of these I want to talk about is number five, embrace the adequate. I would imagine there were a bunch of vice presidents perhaps listening to this podcast right now who are cringing when I say embrace the adequate.
Right. Because Tom Peters all those years ago is all about the quest for excellence. And so much of the language in our organizations is we do everything brilliantly. We do everything excellently. But here's the truth about that. You cannot, nor do you want to, deliver everything at an excellent standard. What that means is you are over-engineering a lot of the stuff you're doing. Adequate does not mean inadequate. Adequate means good enough, sufficient. Adequate means it's okay. It's exactly what we were looking for. Every time you deliver more than adequate on what I would call your good work, the stuff that needs to be done but doesn't need to be done to an extreme, you are wasting time and money and energy and focus. You want to save those precious resources for the work that truly does need to be excellent, the work that is your great work, that has the most impact, that really makes a difference. This is a simple but difficult concept because so many people are into self-awareness and self-growth, which means you're an A-type personality, which means you've been brought up and I'm going to do everything brilliantly because that's the sort of person I am. It is costing you. One of the great books that is just out is Rework by Jason Fried and the guys at 37 Signals. I interviewed Jason recently and we talked about launching products. He said, trying to get things perfect, trying to get things excellent before a launch, crippled us because it would just mean we'd never get the thing out the door. It's about going, what's adequate, what's efficient, what's good enough, and trusting that you can build on that, change that, tweak that later if you need to.
You know, it's interesting. There was an edition of Wired magazine, I think a couple months ago, and it dealt with the whole issue of failure. One of the featured stories in it had to do with the software team that developed the video game Duke Nukem. They had this smash, gigantic success, and they never released another product because they were caught in perfection hell.
Right, but you look at Google, a fairly successful company. They put out all their stuff in beta mode, and they say, this is beta mode. This isn't the final thing. We're still trying to figure this out. We're still trying to get it out there. Or IDEO, the most influential design company in the world. IDEO's slogan is, fail faster to succeed sooner. It is a challenging concept, but you will be crippled if you think you can do all your work and do it all excellently. It is not only impossible, it's a deeply unhealthy way to think. You become a slave to work because that is a never-ending task. You're like Sisyphus pushing the rock up the hill in Hades, condemned to a life of misery. And who wants that?
Yeah, if everything is important, nothing is important.
Right, exactly.
Michael, what we've talked about so far, I think we've been in a pretty tight orbit around the individual. Can you talk for a second about how some of the ideas and concepts might be applied to a small team or to a larger department?
The greatest force for change in an organization is the team, the small unit. It's pretty tough as an individual to start swimming against the tide and doing things differently because you've got that whole weight of the organization and status quo. It's really difficult to change organizations by trying to boil the ocean. I've been a change management consultant for years now, and I've seen the statistics. About 11% of change initiatives are actually successful. Pretty miserable. So how do we as a team think about what our great work is extremely powerful because it creates enough critical mass to support each other. You create allies, and you can really make a difference and create a cultural change within your organization. Really, my work is about facilitating teams most often, and all of the exercises in the book can actually be scaled up and run as a team process. So if anybody says, I know how to facilitate a little bit, I could lead my team on some of these conversations. You don't need anything more than the book to figure out. I can run this process with my team.
Mm-hmm. The last question I have is, what's with the brightly colored shirts, Michael? Everywhere I see you on the internet or on your book covers or whatever, you're wearing these shirts I'm not so sure I would purchase, much less wear. What's the gig there?
Okay, my company is called Box of Crayons. So it's not going to make a whole lot of sense for me to show up in a black suit and a white shirt and a red tie. But here's the other thing. There is something called, and I can't remember the name of the consultant who came up with this, the Perceived Weirdness Index. And what's important about me being a consultant and outsider to most organizations is I have to be a little bit different, but not too different. Because if I'm really different, I'm going to have no influence and no credibility. But if I show up dressed exactly like everybody else in that organization, they're going to say, you're just one of us, and quite frankly, we have enough us. We don't really need your point of view. So part of the way I dress and part of the way I write and part of the way I try and show up in this world is to say I'm a little bit different, but not too weirdly different. And the shirts are just a symbol, a metaphor for I know none of you would wear a shirt like this, but I can get away with it because I'm just a bit different and my company's called Box of Crayons and I'm preaching a philosophy which is about find your own path, be true to yourself, be authentic. And that tends to work.
Okay. We've been speaking to Michael Bungay Sanier, author of the book Do More Great Work. And his two websites are boxofcrayons.biz and the book website, which is domoregreatwork.com. Michael, thanks for being with us today.
Hey, this is a great conversation. Thanks for having me.
AMA training courses are now available direct to your desktop. Our virtual seminars deliver the power of AMA training without the travel, without time away from the office, but with the ability to catapult your skill set and career to new heights. For more information, visit amanet.org/virtual-seminars. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.